So our next speaker is Mariada Wallet. She currently works as a humanitarian monitoring and evaluation specialist for an international NGO.
You'll have to excuse me in advance because I had the 20 minutes in my head when I made the presentation, so I'm going to skip through some slides quickly. So I've worked for the last, for 7 years I've worked for humanitarian NGOs, and the majority of that has been on the U.S.-Mexico border. I have no relationships to disclose. So the majority of our work was in Nogales, Sonora, Mexico. It's a border community just south of the southern Arizona, on the Mexico-U.S. border, adjacent to Arizona. Has anyone been to Nogales before? Great, great. So this region of the border is known for the most migration-related deaths and increased enforcement measures in the last decade. And of course, Arizona has been in the spotlight for anti-immigrant legislation. In 2010, the risk of dying while crossing north into Arizona was higher than ever before, with a record-setting 252 bodies found. The death rate has increased even as apprehensions have declined in that region because of human traffic getting pushed into more dangerous areas. And then, of course, I probably don't have to tell you that the interior U.S. immigration enforcement has also increased, and deportations have remained steady, if not setting more records under the Obama administration from policies like secure communities and that kind of thing. And that the majority of people who are being deported are not dangerous criminals. And if they do have a criminal record, a lot of times it's because of reentry. What was established in 2008 in the border states was hypercriminalization of someone coming across before it was a civil infraction. Now people are receiving federal misdemeanors and felonies just for reentry multiple times. And so when you hear the number of criminals being caught, a lot of times that's their criminal record is reentry. And then finally, in recent years, organized crime violence has really increased in Sonora as human and drug smuggling has really commingled, drug smuggling actually taking over human smuggling. So migrants who are wanting to get across to their families are now caught up in a lot more violence to get across and in northern Mexico. And so this is kind of the background, the setting. And so there's more at risk and more at stake now for people who are crossing. Just some writing on the border wall in Nogales, Sonora, near the port of entry. 1070 was the restrictive immigration legislation last summer passed, and then redada means a raid, an ICE raid. So I've worked with this group, No More Deaths, No Más Muertes, and we've worked in Nogales since 2006 with partners like the Sonoran government, Red Cross, Jesuit Refugee Service, and churches, specifically working with repatriated and deported migrants. And we realize that there's a growing need to find out what the health determinants are for people who are deported and to respond better for folks who have lived substantial amounts of years in the U.S. There's obviously a lot of challenges in obtaining reliable data for this population because they're highly mobile and vulnerable in northern Mexico. So from July 2010 to March, No More Deaths volunteers completed 105 deportation impact surveys with recently deported individuals, and they obtained a verbal consent for this 30-minute interview, which took place in facilities serving migrants in Nogales, and the survey approval was gained through the organizational legal team. The inclusion criteria included that the person had lived previously in the U.S. and that they were then removed from the U.S. and they had to be adults. So really quickly, the lit review mostly looked at comparing refugee health to folks with irregular status, whether they're asylum seekers or undocumented immigrants, and then also looking at care and detention, which has really been in the spotlight recently. What are you exposed to in the borderlands, and how do you care for mobile populations, and then also how do you begin to treat traumatic stress among immigrants? The main dependent variable was the internationally validated 10-point self-reported health scale for physical and mental health. That's an example of how we asked it. Obviously, it was translated, with one being the least distress, rating how much distress you're in, one being the least, 10 being the most distress or the worst. Just the theoretical framework I used was the Anderson Behavioral Model for Vulnerable Populations. I don't really have time to go through this slide, so you'll have to ask me about it later. Here's some volunteers from Arizona State University, medical volunteers as well, and interviews. So the analysis included exploration of descriptives and frequencies for each variable, and then running crosstabs and chi-square for each variable in relation to physical and mental health ratings. And the variables were grouped by pre-arrest variables, arrest and detention variables, and then post-deportation exposure variables is what we called it. So exposure to violence, being robbed, and security in northern Mexico. And So then the chi-square and crosstabs identified the key variables potentially correlated with either the physical or mental health ratings. And not all variables showed statistical significance at the 0.05 or less level. So I also looked at the patterns of linearity for the variables to also see whether or not they could be included in the regression ultimately. And there was a compounding impact part of this that I'm not going to be talking about in this presentation. So here are some of the demographic results. The majority were males that we interviewed, and the country of origin was Mexico for the most part. 33 years old as the median age. For the sample, the average years lived in the U.S. was 14.5 years, which I think is different than maybe the preconception some people have about immigrants who have recently arrived being deported. Most from Arizona, having lived previously in Arizona, California, and Florida, among 14 other states from every region of the country. So when deportations happen, you're really funneled down to them be deported through one port of entry. So Nogales receives a lot. The vast majority of respondents, 94.3%, had family members currently living in the U.S., and those with children in the U.S. had an average of 2.5 children, 80.6% of whom are U.S. citizens. And over half, 57.1%, that's not on there, have at least one child in the U.S. who is a minor, under 18. So the key variables for physical that were associated with physical distress included having lived more years in the U.S. and having your family be more dependent on your income before your arrest, they were more dependent on your income prior to your arrest. The more abrupt the arrest was associated with physical distress, being detained for less than 3 months, so that's probably in more short-term detention centers, poor conditions and abuse in detention, and then longer than 3 months since deportation, not feeling safe in northern Mexico, no resources in Mexico anywhere, whether it's family or friends, experiencing and being a witness to violence, and then needing medical care after being deported, but not having received it. And then the key variables for mental distress were also more years lived in the U.S. and income dependence, as well as your children being citizens, your children being younger, having a spouse or a partner in the U.S., and being younger, which also might mean that your children are younger. So, and then for arrest and detention, all of the detention abuses were associated with mental distress after deportation. As well as the physical symptoms of distress that were that they experienced in detention, that they reported experiencing. And then also the opposite of physical distress is having been deported less than 3 months prior to this interview. Linkages to the U.S. as the primary reason to cross. So when we asked, if you were to possibly cross again, what would be your primary reason to cross? Linkages to the U.S. So usually my job in the U.S. and my family in the U.S. are the primary reason. And then a witness to all forms of violence. This is just another notable correlation. I don't have a lot of time to go through it, but it's just showing that post-deportation emotional distress was statistically significant in its relation to physical symptoms of distress and detention, as well as detention abuses and poor conditions. So in all, this study has provided evidence for the relationships between strong ties to the U.S., such as length of residence and family members and exposure to violence or abuse in detention and after deportation. For physical health, post-deportation exposure to violence and instability accounted for, you can't really see the red circle as much, 20.7% of their variation in their distress and physical health status. And then for mental health, it was more the pre-arrest variables such as strong ties or bonds to the U.S. that were associated with their self-report of mental health. So there are differing, between the physical and the mental health, there are different variables that are associated with them, which is something for our organizations working on the border, I think, to take into account. And that there are definitely other variables that weren't accounted for, I'm sure, in the survey, and these findings warrant discussion about what variables might have been missed that contribute to the health status. And then there are limitations. This wasn't a randomized sample. It was convenient sampling, a relatively small sample size. The social desirability bias could certainly is an issue because these are sensitive questions that we're asking, and we can't say that there's causation. And then there's also the question of what's the longitudinal impact of their current self-report of health, and how is that going to continue to progress? And if they do reunite with their families someday, is that carried along with them? I don't really have time, I think, for examples from the interviews, so I'm going to skip over some of these. So in all, we've recognized with these findings the need for enhanced medical care, particularly mental health services for deported migrants, including more general support in living, staying in contact with family once deported, and providing deported migrants with access to services that allow them to stay well for their families. And then I think it also provokes the question of what is our role as public health professionals to have a voice in these U.S. deportation policies and considering deportation a public health issue.